Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to give you the clarity, courage, and commitment you need to do what matters. My name's Michelle Cashatt. I'm your co-host today, and I'm sitting in the studio with Michael Hyatt. Hey there, Michael.
Hi, Michelle.
Well, we've talked about hiring practices at different times throughout our interactions together, and we'd love to have the right team around us, but there are times that in spite of our best efforts, we end up having somebody part of our team that really isn't a good fit. Right?
Yes. And it's really difficult when that happens, because if you're like me, I avoid conflict.
Mm-hmm.
I like it when everything's going well. And when I have to step in and confront somebody, and worst of all, if I have to fire somebody, that's horrible. I hate that. I'd rather do anything but that.
I don't even like tough conversations, let alone having to let somebody go. There are times.
Have you had to do it?
No, I haven't.
Okay. And we're going to get you prepared.
That's not necessarily because I haven't needed to at different times. It's just because it's just a hard situation.
Yeah.
And I tend to value the relationship so much, and I don't want to have that relationship be broken afterwards. And today you're going to tell us how to be able to walk through a firing process and keep the relationship from going up in flames.
That's right. But I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
Because
I don't have to answer it, do I?
No, you do. Because you avoid conflict.
Yes.
And I do too. Do you ever get into situations where you let things drag on longer than they should?
Absolutely. And it's always a disaster.
Yeah.
I'm getting better at dealing with conflict and difficult conversations sooner because I've seen how it actually gets worse if I leave it unattended, if I don't deal with it. But, I can't tell you how many times I've let it go on for far too long just because I didn't want to risk the relationship or hurt anybody's feelings or whatever it may be.
Well, plus you kind of hope that it'll resolve itself, or maybe
True.
It was an anomaly. I go through this whole thing of self-doubt, like, well, maybe it was me, or maybe I'm expecting too much, or whatever. But I think regardless of that, inevitably you get to a place where the best thing you can do, not only for your organization and for yourself, but really for that other person,
yes.
is release them from their current responsibilities so they can go find something where they can be more productive and useful.
Actually, this is a great place to start, because I think to begin, before we even get into the nuts and bolts of how to walk through a firing process, is I think we need to reframe it, because, you know, firing obviously is not something any of us want to experience.
It's an unfortunate word.
Yeah, it really is, because we don't, it sounds so much like failure to me.
Right.
And in some cases, there are certainly times where people get fired because of some kind of poor performance on their part. They just are lazy, they're showing
sure.
up late, whatever it may be. But at times, the firing is because it's not a good fit, which doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad person.
Right.
It's just a bad experience or a bad fit or whatever it may be. And so then the firing is not always a horrible thing, but a necessary step to get everybody in the right place, functioning at their full potential.
That's right. And I like the word you used, reframe, because I think it does take that. You know, you have to believe at some level that this is going to be better for your organization.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be better for that other person. It's going to be ultimately better for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard when you're in the middle of that. But the truth is, everybody else sees the need. We know in our heart it's the need. And
yes.
it really is more about courage than knowledge, coming up with the right courage to address the situation so that everybody can move on.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you one more question before we dive into the how-to. So when we don't execute on a firing situation that really needs to happen, what's the consequences of that?
Well, there are a lot of consequences. First of all, there's a consequence to people's perception of our leadership.
In fact, that's the first one that comes to mind for
really?
Me. Yeah, because it ends up, people are watching to see how we handle these situations, and it can affect the whole culture in the organization.
Totally, because then everything gets, everybody suddenly knows what you're willing to tolerate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a good thing.
No.
And it doesn't call out the best in anybody else. And I've unfortunately been in situations where I fired somebody and then people have come to me and said, we wondered when you were going to do that.
Mm.
Or we've been waiting for you to do that. Or it's about time.
And you really don't want your people to get to that place.
You don't. And you know, frankly, I'd rather be a little bit more patient and hopeful and hope that I can turn the situation or the person around. But when we don't act, I think people's perception of our leadership and our courage in particular goes south. But just apart from that, it really can affect morale. You know, when people know that somebody who is either not meeting the standards or living up to the values of the organization is being sort of managed around, there's a real sense in which that person becomes the de facto leader. In other words, you're handing off leadership to that person because that person's in control.
Yes.
They're doing behavior that everybody knows it's contrary to the organization, or they're not performing up to a level that's the standard in the organization, and everybody knows that that this is not acceptable.
Okay, so to set the framework for this conversation, we're going to assume that you've already gone through a lengthy, what I'm going to call a rehabilitation process, where you've been trying to get that team member to come in line with the organization, to perform the way they're supposed to do their job. So we're going to assume that you've already gone through a pretty lengthy process of trying to preserve that employee-employer relationship, and it's just not working. So now you're at a place where you literally have to let them go. So we're going to assume that that's exactly where we're entering this process. And you're going to give us several different steps to be able to walk through a firing process without the relationship going up in flames. What's the very first step?
Well, the very first one, I would say, is to start with the outcome you want. And this is going to apply whether you're laying the person off, like let's say that you're going through a tough economic period or a downturn, or your industry is going through a downturn, or the company, for whatever reason, has had a setback, and now you're having to lay somebody off. So it's not related to their performance.
Yeah, has nothing to do with
them. Has nothing to do with them. It's just that you've got to cut somewhere. And I went through this at Thomas Nelson in the recession. You know, our sales literally in 12 months plummeted 20%. So in the course of 12 months, our sales we lost 20% of our altitude, which is huge. When you're talking about a business that doesn't even make 20% margins, you're talking about the difference between business failure and business success. So we had to cut our employee workforce by about 20%. And
That had to be so painful.
Oh, it was so painful. And understand how many this was. I mean, we had 650 employees before we entered the recession. And so we were having to cut over 100 people. From the staff.
Take a time to just a moment to think about that. That's 100 people,
but 100 families.
I was just going to say that for each one person, that represents in most cases a family.
It did.
So this is, I mean, hundreds of people that we're talking about that are impacted by this.
It did. And you know, initially in the recession, I mean, it's clear in hindsight, but as we were entering into the recession, we didn't know that it was going to be as severe as it turned out being. So initially we saw this downturn and I felt like we were ahead of the curve. And so I proactively went to the board and said, look, we've got to trim 10% of our workforce. And they said, great, you know, we appreciate that you're ahead of the curve. And honestly, that wasn't that difficult. I don't want to sound inhumane about this, but I think in a lot of large organizations, there are people that simply because the company's doing well in a good economy, you don't make the tough decisions. So you tolerate more, you've got more kind of fat, so to speak, more people that really should have been let go, but you just were unwilling to deal with it. So that first round of layoffs wasn't that difficult. It was still part of it, the human part of it that hurts. But you go.
But it was probably like almost a necessary pruning in some ways. Yeah. Like there's some benefit from that.
You think the organization's going to be fine. Well, then we went to the next 10%. And now all of a
sudden. Now it starts to be a little more painful.
A little more painful. Because now you're letting go good people. I think of one guy in my church, for example, that I had known for 30 years and had been with the company that long.
Oh, wow.
And so we had to let him go. Again, nothing to do with his performance, everything to do with the economy, but it didn't make the conversation any easier. And I earlier said that we let go 20%. We actually ended up letting 28% go because we let still another 8% go after that. So but by this time, you're really cutting into bone. I mean,
starting to wonder if you're sacrificing productivity and potential revenue and everything else because you're...
Can you do it and survive?
Can you? Yes.
Yeah. So you're just trying to stay ahead of what the economy is telling you. So all that to say is that these steps, which I'm about to outline, would apply in that situation too.
Okay.
But it begins with starting with the outcome you want.
Okay.
So I remember as we were in the recession, we weren't calling it that, but as we were in the economic downturn, I got all my executive team together and we had all collectively come to the conclusion that we need to cut 10% of our staff. And so we said, look, it's really important, not only for the sake of the people that we're letting go, because we love these people. And even though they're not as integral to the mission, like I was talking about before, we want to treat them with dignity,
yes,
with compassion, with respect. We certainly don't want them leaving hating the company, or worse, being left to fend for themselves. What can we do? And so we started with the outcome. So we said, look, we want these people to feel like they've not been abandoned. So we're literally writing these on the whiteboard. So we want these people to feel like they're not alone.
I like that. I like that you were actually writing down what that outcome was. Very, yeah. very clear. How many people were part of this discussion?
There were 12 of us.
That's yeah. great. So everybody was on the same page about
where everybody's on the same page.
Okay, as you're identifying this. Okay.
So that was one of them. We didn't want people to feel like they were left alone. We did want to give the maximum severance we could. In fact, we looked at our employee handbook and we doubled that.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
we were in a position to do that. And so we said, we just don't want anybody to have any doubt that we've gone the second mile. But then we started getting down to things like they were all going to get a phone call from one of those executives yes. in the room. So even though they might have been three or four levels down from us, we were going to make a call and not offer anything other than to just say, hey, I just want you to know, I'm so sorry.
Just to acknowledge, I mean,
just acknowledge
it. It's amazing how just a sliver of validation, just acknowledging yeah. can just really encourage or empower another person. It's amazing how that can happen.
And it's easy when you're running a company or you own a business to kind of leave the ugly stuff to somebody else mm-hmm. or to duck and run. And we were determined that we didn't want to do that. And moreover, we said we want a communications plan, and we developed one so that we have somebody on that team has contact with the people mm-hmm. that are let go on a regular basis. And in every case, what can we do to help? Can we write letters of recommendation? Can we make phone calls on their okay. behalf? Because, and we said this together as a team, our mission is not done mm-hmm. until these people are all placed in another organization and have a job. Mm-hmm. And it was the right place to begin because that framed everything that informed the process, that informed the policy, it informed the communications plan, everything. What leads to that outcome? And getting really clear on that outcome is critically important.
You know, another thing I was thinking as you were talking is that you guys were handling this for the people that were exiting, but the people that were staying are also watching exactly
Absolutely.
What you're doing. And if you wouldn't have chosen to treat those who were leaving as valuable as you did, everybody else that was watching, it would have changed how they felt about you
Totally.
And your leadership in the organization. Well, so it was so key.
And this is why you get cynicism in organizations.
Yes.
Where they go like, gosh, it used to be that people would commit themselves to a company for life. Mm-hmm. And then people became sort of interchangeable, moving parts, mm-hmm. expendable
yes.
when the need arised. But when you treat people with dignity and with respect and with compassion, it does communicate mm-hmm. to your existing workforce that they really are important and they're valued. And I mean, I can tell you, all those executives I know in that, even that first layoff, there were a lot of tears.
Mm-hmm.
It was really
of
hard.
Course.
It's hard to look somebody in the face and let them go.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not suggesting that people need to feel sorry for CEOs or executives who still have their jobs, but who are letting go other mm-hmm. people. But I'm just saying that in the best organizations, there's a cost even there.
Yes.
The best executives agonize over this. I mean, there were many sleepless nights I had over
I'm sure.
This very thing, because I keep thinking, first of all, I felt like I've let these people down. And if I'd done my job as well as I could have, we wouldn't be in this situation. Mm-hmm. And of course, in the economic downturn, yeah, there were probably different things I could have done, but there's also some macro
yeah.
economic factors that
you can't control.
Beyond our control. Yes. But still, I think somebody said to me one time, they said, well, does it get easier the more you fire people? And I fired a lot of people, unfortunately, in my life, or laid them off. I say, no, it doesn't. And I hope to God it never does.
Yes. Yes.
Because then I'll know something's happened to my humanity.
Mm-hmm. Very, very true. Okay, so that first step is to start with the outcome you want. And this applies to whether you are going through a firing process because of a layoff, you know, something that they did not deserve, or let's say somebody
yeah.
just had horrible performance, you know, showing up late or skipping work or whatever it may be, and you needed to fire them for that reason. But you still want to start with the outcome. What kind of ultimate outcome do you want to establish?
Yeah,
or
well, exactly.
What do you want to see?
Let me give you another example where we had to fire somebody. It wasn't for... This wasn't a performance issue, though. We've had plenty of those. But this was really a moral turpitude issue.
Okay.
So we had a gentleman in my division. I was a lower-level executive at the time who was viewing pornography on his company-owned computer
okay.
on company time. Now, what was extraordinary about this was that he was in a cubicle. So he's not in a cloistered room mm-hmm. where he could close the doors and nobody knew what he was doing. But he's in a cubicle, literally. And he got ratted out by somebody that just passed his cubicle. And happened to see. So, you know, you began this episode by talking about you go through process, and you always do.
Uh-huh.
So we went through process, and we made it crystal clear that this was you know, a very serious offense, that he absolutely couldn't do that. If he ever did it again, he was out of there. And frankly, it was the first time it had ever happened. Probably wasn't the first time it happened in the company, but the first time we ever was brought to our attention. And so we're trying to frame policy around this as it's happening. So we felt like, okay, we're going to warn him. Well, then he did it again. Clearly had a problem.
Yeah.
Now, the sad part about this, I hate to say this, but he was a pastor on the side.
Oh, really? Okay.
So we did the same thing. We went through the same exercise. What do we want for this guy? What's the outcome we want? First of all, we want him to be crystal clear as to why he's being fired.
Yes.
And we do want to be compassionate, but honestly, our intervention and the fact that we're about to fire him is probably going to be the very thing
he needs. It's probably the best thing for him at that point.
Well, I mean, honestly, getting caught the first time, you would think, and obviously this was a serious addiction, but you would think would have gotten his attention. But, and maybe it did, but he couldn't break out of it.
Yes.
So I remember in that situation, I was, the executive who actually had direct responsibility for him lived in another state. And so I was there. So I just said, look, I think I need to do this. And so I did. So it was HR, somebody from HR. It was me. It was the individual in question. And I mean, when I confronted him, oh my gosh, he pled. And I followed a format that I'm going to suggest to you here in a minute. I started with a conclusion. And he said, if my wife finds out, my marriage is over.
That's heartbreaking because you know he's really struggling. Yes.
And I said, you know, I feel terrible about that. I mean, I'm really sorry for that, but that's not really my responsibility to own. You know, that's something that probably you should have stood up and taken ownership for long before now, and you're going to have to deal with it. But still, as far as we could, I wanted to do it with respect and with compassion.
And still treat him with value and...
But it wouldn't have been compassionate for me to let him continue.
No, it wouldn't. I mean, that would have been more self-serving other than him serving.
Right.
I mean, if you really care about his best interest, at some point you do have to follow through on that. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. However, I want you to stick with us because we'll be right back with several more steps on how you can go through an effective firing process without the relationship going up in flames.
As a busy and successful blogger, podcaster, author, speaker, and consultant, I am constantly asked about the tools I use to get it all done. Now, for the first time, I'm going to pull back the curtain and let you peek inside my toolbox to see the software and hardware I use for everything from blogging and podcasting to productivity, social media, and speaking, plus so much more. You can't buy Inside My Toolbox, but you can get it for free by subscribing to my free email newsletter. When you subscribe, you'll receive my newest content right in your inbox. You'll never have to worry about missing an important post or update again. To get your free copy of the Inside My Toolbox ebook, visit michaelhyatt.com and enter your name and email address into the form on the page. Don't waste any more time or money using the wrong tools. Sign up today at michaelhyatt.com.
All right. So after you start with the outcome that you want and you establish that, what would be the next step, Michael?
Well, this is something that I used to see as an impediment and a needless bureaucratic obstacle, but it's vitally important. Discuss your plans with HR.
Okay.
Okay. So if you don't have an HR department,
like
because
if you're self-employed like me
self-employed,
and you have like two people, you just talk with yourself.
Well, it might be worth checking with some legal counsel. I mean, it depends on the gravity of the situation. But
or if you have a board, some people in like nonprofits will have like a board and they can consult with them.
And therefore, you know, maybe we should have put this in as a step too, but know what the rules of engagement are.
Okay.
Because larger corporations will require a process of remediation where you're trying to fix it, trying to address it so that the employee, and it's really not fair to the employee, you know, no employee should be surprised when you fire them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They should absolutely have known several different conversations that made it very, very clear.
They're walking down this path that they've taken by choice. And so, but I would discuss the plans with HR because you've got to get a couple things squared away. First of all, you want to make sure that you've got the right process so that you're pretty much litigation proof. You know, you don't want to come back and be sued. And there are issues sometimes when you're firing older employees or... you know, it could be a variety of situations. You just want to be careful that you've observed the law to its fullest extent and given that person every consideration. You want to know what kind of severance you're authorized to offer, if any. You want to know what clearly next steps are. The most important thing is to know is what's going to happen once you deliver the news. Where does the conversation go from there? Are you going to direct them down
like
to
a next
HR?
Step. Okay.
Are they going to be, you know, are you going to give them a month? Are they going to be able to say goodbye to their colleagues? You know, what are the next steps?
And or are HR you can carrying you a box into the meeting and saying?
Well, I can tell you.
It happens sometimes.
I know. When I was at Thomas Nelson, long before I became the CEO, but I mean, there was a practice that it was very old school, that if you were let go, somebody from HR escorted you back to your office
really?
With a box. You packed up, they waited for you to pack, and then they escorted you out of the building. And that to me is not acceptable. I mean, maybe if you work for the CIA or some, you mm-hmm. know, high security facility, but that's just needlessly humiliating. Mm-hmm. That's not going to get you the outcome. And that's evidence mm-hmm. of somebody that wasn't clear on the outcome before they went into
before
that
they
or
went
didn't
in.
Care.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so start with the outcome. Discuss your plans with HR. What is that third step?
Okay, the next part is probably the difference maker in terms of this coming turning out well or not turning out well. And that is create a set of specific talking points.
Before. This is all before the meeting.
All before. This is your preparation before you get into the meeting.
Okay.
And if you don't do this, here's what you risk. You get into the meeting, you get caught up either in that person's emotion or your own emotion, or you lose your sense of nerve.
I was just going to say, or you're like me and you become a big old chicken and you,
and you backpedal. You
end up, total backpedal, or you just end up talking about the weather instead of diving into the conversation.
I mean, really, if you've done your job right to this point, there should be no question, at least intellectually,
yes.
in your mind that this is the last thing you can do. You don't have any other course of action. So to put yourself in a position, and this has happened to me before, where the other person pleads, promises, begs, tries to mm-hmm. negotiate. And if you're not careful, you can be susceptible to being sucked into that.
True.
So I want to get clear on the talking points. And here's how I work it out. I start with the conclusion. You might have noticed that I'm big on getting clear on the outcome.
Yes, you are.
But I want to start on the conclusion. This is the what. And so I would start the conversation, and this is going to feel...
This might feel a little awkward for me, okay? But go ahead and pretend like you're firing
me. But I would say, Michelle, the reason we're meeting is because I've come to the conclusion that I'm going to terminate your employment with our company. And that decision is irrevocable. I've considered all the options. I've evaluated them carefully. As you know, we've gone through a process here, and I don't really have any other option at this point. I feel like it's not only the best interest of the company, but it's in your best interest. And so I'm therefore terminating your employment effective immediately. So I'm telling them exactly what, because there's nothing worse than being called into one of these kind
mm-hmm.
of meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And for somebody to beat around
waiting for the axe to fall. I mean,
well, because you know it's coming, and
yes,
it's just like,
I agree.
Tell me, get to the conclusion.
That alone is respectful.
That's right. But then to also tell them that it's non-negotiable, it's irrevocable. There's no need for them to plead, mm-hmm. negotiate, or anything else. And let me tell you, when you deliver that news like that, they will be shell-shocked. Even if they've seen it coming, you know, it's just kind of that moment of truth when right there it all happens, it all comes crumbling down around their feet. And whatever you say from that point forward is going to be difficult. I
yes.
mean, they're probably not going to hear it. So that's why you want to get the most important news on the table first.
First, in case they shut down and just kind of stop listening at that point.
Yeah. And I don't want to get involved in a debate. I don't want to get involved in a negotiation. Again, this isn't up for discussion. By this point, I'm crystal clear what's got to be done. And then it's just a matter for me as a manager of, do I have the courage to follow through? And if I've got the talking points
mm-hmm.
and I'm just running down the talking points, even when I start to lose my nerve or feel like I want to backpedal,
mm-hmm.
starting with the conclusion, now I can't back up.
Mm-hmm. You've already
said
it's irrevocable.
That's right.
Okay.
So then I would go from there to the rationale. So if the conclusion is the what, the rationale is the why. So, and I would keep this really simple.
And these are the reasons for the
firing. These are the reasons why.
Okay.
I'm doing this. It's not going to sound like it to somebody who's been on the receiving end of this, but I'm doing this out of compassion.
Okay.
I want them to know. The worst thing that can happen from my perspective, I don't need to do this as a manager, but I want to do this for their benefit.
Mm-hmm.
I would hate to leave a meeting like that and wonder why.
What did I do wrong?
I'm not clear.
Yes, I agree with that.
So I want to be clear.
Because you want to try to avoid it in the future. Or at least me, if I was in a firing situation, I'd be like, I need to know what I did wrong
That's right.
I could keep from doing it in the future. I don't want to go through
it. It could
this
be
again.
As simple, the rationale in this situation, if it was a layoff, could be as simple. I just want you to know, this has nothing to do with you.
Hmm. Yes.
You know, this has
and
to do with
hearing that, like hearing, I've been in that kind of layoff situation
really?
Like that before. And just hearing that phrase, I almost needed to hear it a couple times.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to say again, it has nothing to do with you. And that was very powerful for me.
Well, and especially in a layoff situation, when you can follow that up by talking about what you're going to do on their behalf
uh-huh.
or how you're going to try to help them or whatever can be hugely helpful too. But it might be as, look, you know, you've been chronically late. Mm-hmm. You haven't been showing up. You've been absent without, you know, an excuse. And we've warned you about this. We've given you a written reprimand. For whatever reason, you've been unable to change that. And we just got, I mean, I had an assistant one time that I had to fire for this reason. I said, I just have to have somebody that's here. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you're not coming in on time and that you've disappeared completely a couple different times, it's just not acceptable. And that's why we've come to this conclusion.
So, and that's very short and sweet and clear.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be, you know, 10 reasons. You know, you don't have to justify it. That's not the purpose of this. That's important.
Okay. That's an excellent point. Because when we get in these situations, especially if we are, you know, it's uncomfortable and we're nervous about it, we can get into the habit of being very, very defensive about
that's
why
right.
we're doing what we're doing. And that's really not the point of this.
That's right. You're gonna lay these reasons out for their sake so that there's clarity on mm-hmm. that part. And you do need to provide some rationale for uh-huh. why. I mean, it's not just, this just isn't a whim. Or capricious, but there's a reason behind it. Then I think going to the process, the when and the how, you know, when does this become effective? Is it effective now? Are we giving you, you know, a 30-day warning, like in the case of a layoff mm-hmm. or whatever? I do think in most situations, the faster you can do it, the more compassionate it is.
Okay.
If you want to allow more time, put more severance on the end of it, you know, so that they can get onto their next assignment. Because once somebody knows they're not on the team, even in a layoff situation, they're, understandably so, looking for their next
opportunity. Oh, yeah. One foot's already out the door.
Yeah, their head's not in the game.
Typically, when it's time to make a change, you just got to make it as quickly yep. as possible.
So at this point, too, the other thing I would do in the talking points is I'd really have these written. What are the benefits that we're offering? You know, what's the severance? What's the length of severance? What will happen to their benefits? Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can actually just punt this to HR. It's not a bad idea to have somebody from HR, if you're in a large enough company, have that to have somebody present with you.
Okay.
The only reason I don't like that sometimes, and I probably would favor doing it most of the times, is that if you ever get called into a meeting with your boss and somebody from HR,
it's just,
that's curtains.
That's just, and that's so uncomfortable. And it can feel humiliating if it's somebody, especially if it's somebody from HR that you're not familiar with, don't have a relationship
yeah.
with.
The value of it, and unfortunately a lot of companies have had to go to this, is because just to kind of cover your bases legally mm-hmm. and make sure that mm-hmm. you've got a witness to the conversation.
All right. So start with the outcome you want. Discuss your plans with HR. Create specific talking points. And those talking points include your conclusion, the what, your rationale, the why, and the process, the when and how. So what would be the fourth step?
That's to initiate the conversation.
All right. So these first three steps are literally all the prep before
all
you even meet face-to-face. And then starting with number four, that's the face-to-face interaction.
Yeah. And now it's time to schedule this meeting. Now, it's important to do it as soon as your heart knows, as soon as you know, have come to the conclusion you're going to do it, because here's what happens. That conclusion will leak out of our system. Now, I'm not talking about like a literal leak in an organization, but I'm talking about your nonverbal clues will give you away.
There's so many. It's like you can't help but hint at it.
That's right.
Even when you're trying really hard to keep it to yourself.
You can. I mean, your eyes, you know, you won't look at the other person in the eyes. Uh-huh. There's just a lot of things that'll happen no matter how hard you try. So the shorter the time is from the decision to the time you actually deliver the news, mm-hmm. the better.
Okay.
And that's so good. There have been a lot of times when I don't set this meeting far in advance. Sometimes it would be the day of, mm-hmm. particularly in a large layoff situation, because then, I mean, you would create trauma in an organization, start calling random meetings with a whole bunch of people you don't usually meet with, and schedule it 2 weeks in advance.
Oh, gosh.
Then the whole organization is just like freaking out for 2 weeks. Like, well, because they kind of know it can't be good.
Zero productivity
That's
during
right.
that 2 weeks.
So the shorter the time can be, you know, again, I think the more humane it is, the more compassionate it is, because there's nothing worse than not knowing.
Yes. Make a decision and then execute it.
And deliver it.
Yep. Absolutely.
So you got to initiate that conversation. This, again, really comes down to courage. Mm-hmm. But go ahead and schedule it. Get on the calendar. Have your talking points, all this other preparation, and go into start the conversation.
All right. So move on to the fifth step. What would that be?
Well, I would be firm. This is the fifth step. Be firm but compassionate. You need those two things. Firm in that you're not going to budge. Some people, not everybody, in fact, I would say the minority, but some people will test your resolve. Mm-hmm. So they'll just want to see if you really believe this or you can be talked out of it. So you've got to be firm and you've got to be clear before you go in. And sometimes it helps having kind of an accountability partner, you know, somebody in HR, maybe even your boss, but somebody that's, you know, you're going to report back to after this conversation. So you're going to follow through. But then also be compassionate. You know, if somebody wants to vent, and sometimes that happens, you know, they want to give you the why, or maybe it's a layoff situation and mm-hmm. they're just like, they're stunned and they had no idea. And what are they going to do? you know, be compassionate. I mean, I've prayed with people in those meetings. I've listened to them as they've cried and, you know, it can be it can be extremely tough situation, but I think you've got to be compassionate. So you have to be a little bit open to what happens, but you got to be firm in your resolve follow through.
All right. So be firm, but compassionate. And then the final step is?
I'd say follow up with the individual. And here's what I mean by
and
that.
And you're talking like a week or 2 weeks later?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, whether it's write them a note, if you can, write them a letter of recommendation. You know, there are situations sometimes where the person just wasn't a right fit. You know, maybe it looked like performance, but it was just because they weren't the right fit. But for the right fit, you could give them a letter of recommendation if they were in another position that could really utilize their gifts. So, but to just reach out and have some contact with them. Again, it could be a written note. It could be a phone call, which is what I would prefer. But to give them a call and say, hey, I just want you to know I'm thinking of you. How's it going? Have you found anything yet? There were people, particularly in the recession, that I reached out to every couple of weeks for months.
Really?
Yeah, just saying, okay, well, let's try this. Because I'm just trying to help get them placed. Because again, our outcome, specifically the layout,
exactly,
get those people.
This all
placed.
Goes back to the established outcome that you make at the very beginning.
Well, and here's my goal. I want to be able to see that person in public months after this and not feel awkward. Feel like that I can give them a hug. I'm a hugger. I want to give them a hug, and for them to not have any animosity towards me. And I could definitely see them saying, "I hated that situation. I didn't want to be let go." But I can honestly say the company did everything they should have done to make sure that I was taken care of and to really help me on to my next assignment.
Which is what you want.
That's
if somebody leads an organization, of course, you know, we value people and we want them to have a good experience. But just purely speaking from a business standpoint, it doesn't do you any favors to handle this incorrectly and have people that hate the company out there in the world talking about it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I personally believe I have a higher accountability ultimately to treat people well and to treat them with respect. And so I would do that regardless of the consequences, but you can't go wrong when you treat other people like you'd like to be treated in that same situation. So just imagine yourself in that same situation. How would you want to be treated?
Now, I would imagine, you know, my gut is for any of these kind of conversations that they really need to happen face to face. Of course, I'm sure there's some instances where if you're working remotely with people, that it may not be able to happen. But I would say that we'd have to, like, you know, even if you have to fly somewhere, if you're going to fire somebody, face-to-face is really what you need to do.
Absolutely.
This is not a phone call or definitely not an email or anything like that.
I had another situation. This was maybe 30 years ago. It was early on in my career. It was another company, but it was another recession, and they decided to lay off five of their people on their sales force. And the sales manager, rather than doing what you're talking about, at the very least, pick up the phone and call. But he should have flown out and met with each one of them individually. Didn't do that. Said he sent them a letter.
Oh,
so they got literally a letter in their mail at home that their job had been eliminated. And the damage from that is unbelievable. It affects the entire company's morale. That becomes legendary.
Oh, those are the kinds of stories that are told and retold and retold.
Absolutely. But that's what we have to realize as leaders. We are creating these stories. And so what's the story that you want told about how you dealt with these people when the chips were down?
That's so powerful. So again, today we're talking about how you can go through a firing situation without causing the relationship to go up in flames. And I think we have some really good steps here to go through. This isn't anything that any one of us really wants to do. It's not something we look forward to. However, it can be successful. And those steps, again, are start with the outcome you want. Number two, discuss your plans with HR. Three, create specific talking points. Four, initiate the conversation. Five, be firm but compassionate. And six, follow up with the individual. If you've enjoyed today's conversation, you can get the show notes and a full transcript of the entire episode at michaelhyatt.com. For those who'd rather watch instead of listen, we also have the entire video posted at michaelhyatt.com as well. And could you do us a favor? We'd love for you to head on over to iTunes and rate the show. This is very key in getting this content into the hands of people that truly need it, and we'd be very grateful. So any final thoughts on this subject, Michael?
Well, like most things that are difficult, it's easier if you lean into it rather than resist it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't avoid it. Just do it well. Purpose it. You're going to do it well, and it'll be better for everybody.
And I'd love to hear some feedback for people that actually go through this and hear kind of what their experience has been. Well, thank you again for being with us today. And until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Do what matters.